Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an allied healthcare professional with over 25 years of experience. My career has primarily spanned private physical therapy and public school athletics. Driven by curiosity and a passion for the industry, I created the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast to explore the ever-evolving landscape of healthcare with a focus on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we'll dive into the challenges healthcare professionals encounter and discuss how collaboration can enhance understanding within the industry. Our goal is to improve the experience for patients and athletes alike. Now, on to the show. Join me this week as I speak with Chris and Diane Williams, the parents of McCray Williams, as we discuss medical amnesty. McCray Williams fulfilled his dream to play Division I lacrosse as a goalie when he was recruited to play for Lafayette College. McCray was a true scholar athlete, incredibly well known for his spectacular game-changing saves, as well as his accomplishments in the classroom. Tragically, McCray passed away due to a traumatic head injury resulting not from on the field, but from a fall in his freshman dorm after attending a lacrosse introduction party. Instead of summoning emergency help, students strapped a backpack on him, also known as Jansporting or drunk packing, and put him into bed in the misguided belief it would help. But as the hours passed, McCray's brain bled uncontrollably, and by the time help was called, it was too late. Shortly after arriving at a neurotrauma center, it was clear that McCray was in grave peril. He passed away September 12, 2017. Within days, he was taken off life support and his organs were donated to five individuals. It is so horribly tragic that an athlete who was so well known for making saves as the last line of defense wasn't saved by those around him. If 911 had been called, McCray would be with us today. His death was completely avoidable. When students are afraid to call for help at a time of medical need, they are taking great risk with the lives of others. In McCray's memory, the McCray James Williams Foundation was established. Please join us this week as we speak with Chris and Diane Williams, and we speak about the life of McCray and what medical amnesty is.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This week, I have Chris and Diane Williams. They are two parents that I met in Weston back. It's going back probably end of the 2000s, probably like 9, 10, 11, around there, maybe even a little later. They are both started the McCray Williams Foundation, which is a 503c nonprofit, in honor of their son McCray, who had tragically passed away when he was a freshman at Lafayette College, where he went to play lacrosse. A little history for me is that I met both Chris and Diane because their son Chase played lacrosse and hockey at Weston for a few years, and he frequented my athletic training room with injuries, and we became pretty friendly. It was a kind of a place for him to kind of hang out, as most athletes do with their athletic trainers, because they have that feeling of safeness when they come in and they can work with them with full transparency. So I became pretty friendly with Chris. Him and I have a passion for motorcycles. We would go for rides together when he was up in Weston. They had since moved to Nantucket and also down to Florida. And our passion for beer, Chris started making beer, and I went and would taste test his beer, which was pretty fantastic. I can still remember the day when I heard about, tragically, when McCray had passed. I was sitting in my office in Wellesley. I also am at a physical therapy practice. And I picked up the phone and I called Chris. And I think, I don't know if you remember, Chris, but you and I picked up the phone and for probably 15 seconds, there were no words. Like, I couldn't even get out what I wanted to say to you as a friend. And I still feel that. And I still have McCray's card on my desk in Weston. And I see that every day when I go in. It just reminds me of how special he was as a young athlete. And I had him only for a few years at Weston. But I wanted to have you guys on to explain what the McCray Williams Foundation is, what you're trying to do, and what medical amnesty is, and how young athletes, coaches, parents can actually use this to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. So how we got here is obviously through McCray passing away. but the story is pretty compelling. You know, we dropped him off at college freshman year. He was as excited as ever. He was recruited as a sophomore in high school to play D1 lacrosse, which was incredibly impressive and a testimony to his skill set. And tragically, about 2.5 weeks later into his freshman year, he passed away due to a traumatic head injury that resulted not on the field, but from a fall in his freshman dorm room after attending a lacrosse introduction party, day party. And instead of summoning emergency help, the teammates around him put him in bed, texted one another to keep it on the down low, and they went out to another party. And they left him, and his brain bled uncontrollably. And he, by the time 22 hours later, when after they were trying to put him in a car and bring him to some emergency clinic, they realized they were in over their heads. And then they called for help, but it was too late. And we had to take him off life support at a neurotrauma center in the hospital. And so that's, you know, and I think the thing was, is that Chris and I just couldn't understand. I mean, he was the last line of defense, and yet nobody in his sport, and such a good...
He was a goalie.
And yet nobody was there for him as his last line of defense. And this was extremely strange for us. We couldn't understand it, because with Chase was also a D1 lacrosse player. We couldn't understand how players... We always thought you have your teammates back on the field, but off the field too. And so this was just incredibly disturbing to us. So what we did was we started doing some research, because we just wanted to wrap our hands around and understand why. And that's really how it all started. And our first set of data showed that athletes were 73% less likely to call for help than a non-athlete. And so I think that was really, when we got that info, we just said, okay, we need to really pursue this. We're on to something, and we need to try to make a change, because that just number is just horrible. So
you would expect it to be the other way around.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That number is astonishing to me. And both of you, we've talked about this, you know, recently, probably in the last month or so. And that number blew me away. And I can't fathom why another teammate would not want to help someone out or go to get help with the fear that they themselves would be punished if they did. And to me, that it's just selfishness or not understanding really what's at stake. And I talk to people a lot and about trying to make sure that you're for us as professionals, we're trying to protect the public and make sure that we're doing the right thing for the people we care for. And I try to tell athletes, when we're dealing with injuries, we're trying to protect you, the athlete. You know, we are the defense for you to make sure that you get better, not to put you out there to be unsafe. And I think if the education's there, these athletes will start to hopefully understand what's at stake here. And that's where, you know, the reason why we're talking today is about medical amnesty. And that's what that is, right? Is to be able to provide athletes with the ability to say something without any repercussion. Correct. Can you talk a little bit about the foundation? Like, what's the goal of the foundation in McRae's name?
So, you know, when we first did this research, it was just Diane and I, you know, Facebook and through connections.
Spreading a survey.
You know, just spreading a survey out, you know, and we were astounded by the numbers. So we tried it. We shopped around looking at different ways to make a change. You know, we hit a lot of dead ends, honestly. And so what we decided to do is legitimize the research that we had done and formed a relationship with UNCG, a group in UNCG that does a lot of research work on drinking and sexual assault and things of that nature. They publish a lot of content onto campuses through the NCAA. And so we partnered with them to continue the research and, you know, legitimize it. You know, it had to have true research back kind of approach. And we spent, you know, a good number of years doing that, continuing to survey people, not only student athletes, but non-athletes, athletic trainers, coaches, administrators, really all the people who were around or around the campus and somehow touched this situation. And so the goal of the foundation really hasn't changed from the beginning, which is to find a way to make change such that that 73% at least goes to, you know, zero, and an athlete and a non-athlete are doing the same thing. And, you know, whether we do that through working through schools directly or coaching conferences or the NCAA, you know, we're really looking at different mechanisms and different approaches to ultimately make that change.
We've sort of found that we've had to develop like a multi-prong approach to this, because no one avenue, whether you're looking at like the administration down, like, do you have a policy, get your policy to the athlete level, or we're at the student athlete level, you need to like create a swell of advocating and motivating your other teammates and teams to get a policy in place for on campus. So we've really looked at multiple ways of getting at the problem. But, you know, a lot of this comes out of the fear. So athletes have tremendous fear. You know, they've been working for so long for this goal, and some of them have a scholarship at stake. They're afraid of their coaches disciplining them. They're afraid of retaliation from other teammates, from captains. And it's that kind of pressure that makes them do just what happened with McCray, was keep it on the down low. Let's not go public with this. Let's not reach out for help. It'll all work out. Problem is that there are times when you have to call for help. And what we're trying to do is make a shift in culture, have also, you know, a policy, talk about amnesty. And I think we should talk, what is amnesty? Because a lot of people don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the research really is not so much about amnesty as it is about bystander behavior. And so way back in the 60s, there was a lot of research done on bystander behavior. And what there's some really bizarre sort of facts there. You know, as a regular anyday person walking down the sidewalk, right? Like, you know, will you jump in and help somebody? And generally, human nature is, you know, you won't actually. And what's really interesting is the bigger the group you're in, the less likely you actually are, because you sort of say, well, I don't really know what to do. Somebody else here probably has a lot better knowledge than I. And so, you know, if they're not jumping in, why would I jump in? And so there's some very strange dynamics. And when you get into athletics, all those things really get magnified, as Diane said, right? Like, I'm worried about playing time. I'm worried about retaliation. I'm worried about my money.
Being benched.
You know, all those things. So it ratchets it up for the athlete. And that sort of overcomes their decision-making versus, you know, this idea of having your teammates back.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you talk about like that crowd mentality. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It was in the clinic, and we're talking about, if somebody was in a cardiac arrest on the side of the street, would you jump in and help? And a majority of the people would not, because they're afraid of getting sued. You're protected, you know, by law to help somebody. And people just don't really understand that. And human nature, for me, I mean, because I'm a medical professional, I would help. But for most people, they would just steer clear, like, what do I do? And then hopefully somebody else steps in.
Right.
Well, so medical amnesty started at the state level, actually. And what it basically is it says, if you're doing something illegal, drugs, let's say. Underage drinking, and you need to call for help. You will not be prosecuted for the crime, the thing you're doing wrong.
For you and the other.
Yes, for both you and the person you need to call for help. And now, I mean, this has changed over the years. You know, not every state adopted this. It's taken years. Now, every state but one today actually has a medical amnesty policy at the state level. So, you know, the cardiac arrest on the sidewalk, it's not something illegal unless it was, let's say, you know, byproducts of drugs.
Drugs, right.
You would not get prosecuted in the state of Massachusetts because there is a medical amnesty policy there. So a lot of colleges looked at this and, you know, we're looking at not, you know, they don't really have a big drug problem on campus, but a big drinking problem for sure. And so a lot of universities and schools looked at medical amnesty and said, geez, we should bring those policies onto the campus and try to, you know, reduce the number of medical emergencies, because there's about 2,000 deaths a year on college campuses.
Related to
alcohol.
Yeah, that's 2,000 too many.
2,000.
It's a staggering number that really goes just doesn't get reported on. And so the schools brought the medical emergency on the campus, opened it up to all students. So if there's a policy on a campus, it's generally applicable to everybody on campus.
Right.
Every policy has, you know, slight differences to it, but they're actually easy to find. If you Google the school and the word medical amnesty, you'll find it on their website very, yeah, very quickly.
Yeah.
And you can read, you know, about the policy. This has actually reduced the number of alcohol-related and drug-related deaths on college campuses. Unfortunately, athletes are not actually making that call.
Yeah.
And a lot of athletes don't actually know about it. A lot of the athletic directors, athletic administration, don't actually know the school policy.
Coaches don't.
And coaches actually have no idea what medical amnesty is, and they generally have no idea what the school policies are. They're hyper-focused on the X's and O's and what they do around their sport. And even though they're on a campus, they're very disconnected from what's going on around the campus and
college.
You know, so that is some of what we have to overcome, is to bring the athletes, bring the administration, bring the athletic trainers, and bring the coaches into this, get them to understand that, you know, there's a, yeah, positive thing here because you're saving a life.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you look at athletics and it's a business for most colleges because it generates revenue, right? So these coaches are operating like a business.
Yes.
I feel like there needs to be, like you had said, you got to bring all the stakeholders in. So you got to bring the coaches and the athletic trainers and the administrators. They need to educate as a foundation from the ground up and bring this in as part of their education for all their incoming freshmen and ongoing education for the athletes coming in and transferring in, because there are so many transfer athletes from school to school now with this, you,
yeah,
know, the new, with the portal. So I think that's an important piece. We educate them on injury.
Unfortunately,
but why are we educating them on how to protect each other?
One of the research projects that we did was to look at, you know, as an incoming freshman, you're trained on a lot of stuff. You sit in big auditorium and you're told a lot of things about the school's policies. And then if you're an athlete, you sit in another auditorium, you're told a lot of things. Unfortunately, 2 weeks later, the majority of those kids,
they forget it.
Totally forgotten every single.
We actually, that was one of our research projects.
Yeah. There's got to be a test retest.
How long do they remember?
Yeah.
And the shelf life on the knowledge is really short.
And yet athletes, they go to their orientation and they're told basically that doesn't apply to you. Not directly, but it's told in the form of zero tolerance policy for alcohol. If you're caught, it's going to be this, this, and this. So anything that was potentially retained is out the window.
Pushes it right underground.
We were talking about the Massachusetts law for the MIAA and the zero tolerance. Like you
right,
miss 25% of your season right off the bat. Second offense, you're done. There should be a better understanding of educating the athletes on what to do if they have an alcohol problem versus, you know, penalizing them in a way that they're not going to tell anybody. And, well, I feel like this should be the same way in the NCAA.
This is where the school policy, athletic department, and coach all need to be aligned. If in that case, right, if you're a student athlete, why would you call? Right, you're going to lose 25%. But medical amnesty is there. You know, you should not have that loss of 25%. And everyone's fear is that will actually condone drinking. Bad behavior will increase. We've not done a lot of research in that space, but there's a lot of research teams that have looked at that. Does not actually increase drinking whatsoever. Does not increase bad behavior whatsoever.
Right, right. I think the education needs to be changed. And that's just something that I think is going to be an uphill battle, but I think you guys definitely have something here that needs to be broadcast and then brought through the right channels to be able to get it to where it needs to be. And that's why we're here tonight,
yeah,
is talking about this. So,
well, and we hope athletes will push, because there are a couple of schools that have made changes, and that's been really pushed by the athletes. when the athletes realized that, you know, they were missing out on something that they should get. They've pushed the administration, and the administration of those schools have actually changed their policies and pushed medical amnesty down into the athletic department.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we're doing now is we're going on campus and speaking with athletic departments and coaching staff and student athlete but about this and trying to go school by school to make these changes. And, you know, if we get one, you know, that's a big win. Honestly.
Yeah. Now, how are you trying to, or are you trying to get this at the club level for club athletes, for even, I mean, I hate to say it, but youth athletes, like just educating, like I know they're young, but like at what age do we start? And the high schools, I'm assuming, are in that whole product of like, I guess the scaffolding of what you do.
Yeah, you want to take that? Well, it should start even back at high school.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that this can start at the high school level. I mean, what we're really talking about also the high school is a culture of care, is the importance of having your teammates back and
doing the right thing.
And doing the right thing. And when things start to not be okay, and I think in everybody's gut, you have a feeling for what that is, you should just make the call.
Right.
And that's where I think somebody should be protected and not punished for doing. And, you know, our hope is that through what we're doing, we're going to make a difference and we can save some lives, because it's just not okay right now.
Yeah. And, you know, this started way back. We started talking about when I got to Weston, it was probably 7 or 8 years when I was there, we started to use neurocognitive testing, and concussion was a big thing. It started to come out, and it was really starting to become a problem with young athletes. And for people that are trying to understand like the context of this, I think concussion is different than a subdural bleed like McRae had, right? Totally two different things. But with concussion, we talked about athletes would not say anything because they didn't want to miss playing time. And that was an education piece for us. We had to retest all the time with these athletes, keep giving them information, understand what it is, why it's something that we need to know about, why to tell if one of your friends has an injury or you think something's wrong with them, to let us know. Fast forward, I don't know, 15, 18 years, we've been doing neurocognitive testing. We've switched platforms. People are educated. It's a state law now for people to go through. Or athletes and parents to go through the testing. Your kids had to go through it like online. And that's something that to educate, right? And that was part of the process. Now we have kids coming in. If their friend they don't think is right, they say, hey, Riz, you got to check Jimmy. Like, there's something wrong. I don't know. He's not acting normal. And they come in and we educate, we evaluate, we treat. Right. This should be the same thing. Like, this needs to start grassroots like you're doing, move up the chain, start to get people educated. And that's where our conversation had started, you know, a few months back, where, hey, we need to get you in front of the Athletic Trainer Association. So the national level, the state level, the NCAA, get the stakeholders on the subject to understand like, hey, this is what we need to do. And this is how we need to educate. It needs to be part of the program. So my goal with both of you is to try to get this out to as many people as we can. Educate as many as we can through social media, through the people that I have had on the channel, people that I've actually interviewed. I want to be able to, you know, be able to have a link for the McRae Williams Foundation on our site, so we can actually have that, so people can somehow donate and try to be able to educate more, because I think it's important. And I think it will be something that is going to be a game changer for the foundation, but also for, you know, young athletes, you know, kind of moving through the college ranks.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think that'll be an important piece.
And, you know, we just presented to the college lacrosse coaches at their annual conference to about 700 or 800 coaches. I think actually 4 people in the audience knew what medical amnesty was. So, you know, out of that, we have a couple of invites to go on some school campuses and do the same thing on the campus. But as you said, getting in front of the athletic trainers is another thing we're trying to do, because as you opened up in what you said, the athletic trainers are really, the relationship between them and the athlete is a lot.
It's a much safer space.
It's a safe space, and they they probably talk about things they probably shouldn't talk about.
I always say what happens in the athletic training room stays in the athletic training room. And you can ask Chase because he's heard it before.
And so we think, you know, the athletic trainers are an amazing place for educating athletes on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
Because that's part, like, well, you said 15 years on the concussion thing. Making these changes, unfortunately, takes persistence,
yeah.
consistency
yeah. Yeah.
over a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight.
Definitely not something where you say it once to them and you think they have it. It's really like what we talked about at the coach convention that we went to for lacrosse. It's about repeated. It's almost like a protocol, just like or a game play.
Practice.
And you have to repeat it, whether it's like twice in a season, three times in the season, four times in a season. It's like, look, you know.
Well, you don't run a drill once.
Right.
No.
There's a reason.
No,
right.
You need to have Jim Wilcon educate because yep. he'll talk to them until they don't want to hear him anymore. And he just talks for an hour and a half and then coaching drills for 15 minutes.
But honestly, it's
yeah,
we liken it to running drills. You know, you don't run drills once. You don't
know.
You don't run that play that you only ran once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's the repetition for what they do on the field. It's the repetition for right. for this as well.
Yeah, and coaches need to change their thought process, too. There's a lot of older coaches that probably don't want to hear anything else but what they're doing, and they don't want to hear about the stuff outside of their, you know, four walls of coaching. You need more coaches like Jim, and I joke about Jim, you know, talking a lot, but Jim loves his athletes. Right. He wants to do the best for his athletes, and he's the guy that would be, you know, drilling this into people that, hey, this is important. Take care of each other, their family. We love each other, and this is what we need to do.
He's great like that. We need more of him. Definitely need more of him.
So if we want to share this, you know, the foundation, what's the best way for people to get in touch with you and Chris and Diane? I'd like to have both the website that we can use, and I'll get a link from you guys. I want to post it on the YouTube channel, and it will be on there, which will be, we'll try to tag it on everything because I think it's important to people have the connection with you, and if they do want to donate or they want to somehow voice what the foundation's about and about medical amnesty, at least we have
it
out
there. If they want us to come and speak at one of their, you know, on a campus or at an event,
yeah.
we're happy to do that.
That'll be great. I have a couple collegiate athletic trainers that I'm out in the western part of the country that I'm going to be interviewing soon, and I have a few others I just interviewed that have a lot of pretty thick roots in the athletic training world.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to tap some of them for you guys and kind of see what we can do for you. I'm still on the NATA about trying to get you down there to at least have
awesome.
A booth of something of some sort.
Yeah.
And with the state level, I'm trying to get her to move. I've sent her a couple of emails. I'm going to send another one tomorrow.
Great.
I think it's important. We need to get you guys in front of everybody. And like you said, wasn't reported alcohol deaths in universities is 2,000 too many, and not counting how many ones that could have been saved, you know,
yeah,
is one of those things. We can't have one. We need to have zero.
Most of those don't have to be.
Never have been.
Right. Right. Well, listen, I thank you both. I think this was good just to get some information out there. We're going to do our best to try to broadcast this as much as we can.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see you. Come down anytime.
Listen, Chris and Diane, I want to thank you again. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed today's episode, give us a like, comment, and share it on social media. Access all of our episodes on platforms such as Apple, Spotify, or your preferred podcast app. Stay updated by following us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X at AJR Sports Sci, or visiting our website at ajrsportsscience.podbean.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science for upcoming content. Thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for our next episode.